Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
We have merch. Check out the AmericanGlutton.net shop. We've got t-shirts, hoodies, hats, and more. A number of people have come up to me wearing American Glutton merch, and nothing fills my heart with more pride than seeing somebody in one of these t-shirts. And I've been stopped on the street and asked where to get it when somebody sees me in an American Glutton hoodie. Well, you can get it all at the shop on AmericanGlutton.net. And my favorite t-shirt, Yesterday It Was Tomorrow, Right Now, is up now. Get it while supplies last.
Hi, I'm Ethan Suplee. Welcome to American Glutton. Outside of acting, my two favorite things to do are diet and eat. I have a very complicated relationship with food, and on this podcast, we're going to talk about all of it. Food as entertainment. Food as sport. Food as fuel. I'll talk to experts and the average person, just like you and me.
I hate to ask you to do anything, but if you're enjoying the show, please take a moment to like, subscribe, rate, review, all of the above on whatever app you're getting it from. Today I'm talking to Dave Manheim of the Dopey Podcast. You can find him on Instagram at Dopey Podcast and listen to his podcast. I've been on it. Dopey is great. Dave Manheim, welcome to the American Glutton Podcast.
Thank you, Ethan. I'm so excited to be here. Such an honor and privilege.
Thanks for doing this, man. You are the host of the Dopey Podcast. I've been on your podcast. I think it's funny because my first question to you when I did the podcast was like, what bit of altruism is within you that you're doing this? And you were like, no, it's for a laugh, for entertainment.
Yeah, it's funny. I don't even know. You know, it's like it's I've been thinking a lot about it since you asked me the question. I think I've always insulated myself from being a do-gooder. I do it because I'm a half do-gooder, half fame whore.
Yeah, you listen, know? I don't accept your answer. Like, you give me that answer, and to me, I read, okay, the guy doesn't want me to know that he's doing good. But he's still doing good.
It's like, you know, these new products, like these ice creams that hide vegetables in the ice cream, or like I give my kids muffins that are like secretly made of zucchini. Yeah. That's what Dopey's like. Dopey right. has goodness hidden in its hardness of it.
So how did take me down the path of how you started Dopey? What is your first, I'm going to out you. You're sober. You talk about this on your podcast, so it's not too much of an outing. But I'd love to know your story.
I would love to tell you my story. But did you know that we just put up a clip of you and I talking, and it almost has 2 million views on TikTok?
I didn't
2
know
million?
That. Jesus.
I know. It's a lot.
Okay, let me ask you this, because I actually do have a TikTok account that has like maybe 20 followers. My kid said, you have to have a TikTok account. And I went on it one day and tried to do it, and it was way too confusing. It really is built for the kids. Like once I have pure boomer energy, and so once I learn something, like I'm done. I'm not going to learn a new thing like Snapchat and TikTok and all of this. But from what I understand, TikTok is better at circulating stuff than Instagram. Is that correct?
I'm like you. I don't know how to do anything. There's a woman, her name is Claire. She's a big Dopey fan. And she wrote me like a year ago and she's like, can I be your intern? And I was like, definitely. And then she like took over our Instagram, doubled the followers, she's like, I had a TikTok account, which was horrible. No, like it was terrible. She's like, you have to delete your account. She's like, I'm making a nice account. Now she's the associate producer of the show. She's 21. She lives in Germany and she posted these videos, and your video did almost 2 million views, which is way more than anybody else's. So I want to thank you for that.
That's awesome. Thank you. We're getting this story out there.
Yes. My story is I grew up in New York City. I was the son of two Jewish middle-class teachers, and I wound up becoming a heroin addict, you know? And I mean, for a long time. You know, I was on heroin and methadone and weed and benzos for I'm terrible at math, but I want to say 25 years, like daily, some crazy number. I was on heroin for many, many years and benzos many, many years. And I didn't want to stop anything. This is the abridged history of Dopey story.
Yeah.
And then you can jump in whenever you want. And when I was a kid, I wanted to have a TV show. I wanted to have a talk show. That was like my big fantasy. And I wound up with a little show in my 20s on Broadway Video. And then it turned into a little show on MTV2. I'd actually been on MTV when I was in high school. I was an intern and I wound up getting an on-air gig. But as soon as I was a professional TV person, I became a heroin addict.
Yeah.
And I kind of stopped working for a million years. And I had a girlfriend who took care of me, and I wound up.
Was she using also?
She was a stoner, but she wasn't like, her life was relatively manageable besides me.
And she was aware of everything you were doing?
Yeah. Very aware. She was very aware of it. She was actually, it gets very tawdry and horrible. She was my very best friend's girlfriend. And that's something that I never like thought that I was capable of doing. This was a kid who I met him when I was 4. And when we were in our mid 20s, he had brought his stoner girlfriend back and he didn't smoke weed. And I decided that me and her had a lot in common, so we should have sex. And as soon as we had sex, I was like, you need to leave him and be with me, because I couldn't live with the guilt of having betrayed him. And she did. And me and the guy didn't talk for a million years. And I think there was a lot of guilt and shame around that.
Yeah.
That kept me using a long time.
Is there something, Dave, and I want to ask you this, because and I think about it, like the analogy that jumps into my head immediately is like, it was never my situation really, but I have seen instances of like people that are so heavy they don't leave their couch, like literally. And and in those instances, I just gotta think, like, well, somebody is feeding them, somebody's going to the store, or somebody's like worst case scenario, they're on welfare. Is not enough money to keep you at 700 pounds, 800 pounds, right? Sedentary. So somebody is there bringing you food. And when you say your girlfriend was a stoner, but like not shooting dope and like just completely taking care of you, that's what that looks like to me. Cause it's an odd thing for somebody to not be using dope and totally fine with somebody using dope like that.
I bet you she wouldn't love that I said that she was totally fine with me using it, but she didn't leave.
She didn't leave. I mean, was she pleading with you regularly to stop?
she was really very smart. And I don't think she was going to waste her time pleading with me. I think I struggled and I didn't enjoy addiction. I didn't enjoy being totally dependent on opiates, methadone, benzos, all of it. But I don't know why she stuck it out. You know, I think it's like a codependency story. It's like a Sex and Love Anonymous story or a CODA story or an Al-Anon story where like we get hooked on someone else's need of us or whatever. And I don't think it was a one-way street. And I don't want to like paint a picture of her in any kind of negative light because she was just, she's a very, the funniest thing about her was that we broke up and like within like 10 years, she was so on her, I think she retired before she was 48 or something. And she hadn't worked. She just like went into superstar success as soon as she left me. And my best friend who I'd betrayed wound up becoming like a doctor who works with amputees and he has a good life now. So, and that just assuages my guilt a tiny bit.
Sure.
But the story,
I'm not trying to pin the blame on her. I know where the responsibility lies. I just think that it is an interesting predicament we can get into. Like, I often worry that I'm utterly codependent on my wife and like go out of my way to try to break that. Like, what can I do by myself? You know what I mean? What awkward social situation can I survive without her? How much time, you know, but she's not buying me dope or.
I would imagine from the time I've spent with you, from listening to you, that you are in a state of interdependence with your wife.
Yeah, I think so too.
I would imagine that. And then I was thinking, when I was with my ex, we lived in Echo Park in California, and I was such an American glutton at that point in my life. I was like I was the heroin addict who eats, you know what I mean? Like all I would do, I would like eat an Entenmann's cake for breakfast and an Entenmann's cake for dinner and maybe a healthy lunch in between. And my hobby when I was bored is I would go into the couch to find change and I'd walk down the hill and I'd buy ice cream sandwiches. And I might eat six ice cream sandwiches in a day. Sure. And vanilla chocolate chip and chocolate chip Haagen-Dazs. I was like crazy about eating dessert all day on heroin. So it was my most food gluttonous period was that time.
Yeah. I think that was for sure mine too. There was just no thought to quantities or types of food. I feel like prior to me becoming a drug addict, I had a little bit of thought. There would something be lingering in the back of my head of like, you don't need four cheeseburgers. And once I was doing drugs, if the thought occurred to me, I followed the thought.
It's amazing. Like what happens, like the rules or the lines. I'm on a terrible streak right now. This Halloween business, like Halloween is still looming large in my house. We did an event. My podcast did an event at the beginning of October. So before the beginning of October, I was like trying not to eat too much, not to eat too much dessert, to, you know, exercise and really just cut down my sweet intake and my carbohydrate intake because I was doing this big show. October 7th came and went, and then I just have been eating like everything in sight, like the wheels have come off. And I just downloaded an app from couch to 5K. Okay. And I'm determined to just get out of this gluttonous post DopeyCon. It was DopeyCon. And I expect to see you at DopeyCon 5, Ethan Suple.
When is it? Where it's next year in New York?
October in New York. You would be an incredible addition to our show.
It's a show like on a stage.
Yeah.
Yeah. With lots of
you're
people.
You're like, I don't want to be on stage. I don't want to be
people staring at you. It sounds
Yeah. Well, you're welcome. You're invited to come. You don't have to.
I might come and watch. I bet it's an amazing thing to watch.
Yeah, DopeyCon. This year was DopeyCon IV, and it was way better than I thought it was gonna be.
That is awesome.
Anyway.
Okay, so she leaves. Wait, where were we? She leaves.
I don't know why I started telling. I wanted to tell that story just because it was a gluttonous period. Right. And also, I don't know why that popped up when I was answering the question of the history of our show, but I just started there. The history of our show was after years and years and years of addiction. I guess this is the point. I moved home. My mother was dying and I met this woman, another woman, and she got pregnant.
You weren't sober yet?
No, I was not. I'd gotten off of methadone in Los Angeles, but I was not sober. So once we had this baby, I wanted to get sober way more, but I wasn't getting sober. And I didn't tell my daughter's mother that I had started using heroin again. I had stopped using methadone. I had stopped using heroin. I had stopped taking benzos, but I was still smoking weed. And when she got pregnant, I had a mutual friend of ours decided that that was a good time to start coming by with heroin for some reason, which, you know, I don't know why he thought that would be a good idea. Because looking back, it was really terrible.
Dave's got a lot of stress. Maybe some of this will take the edge off.
At the time, I remember being very grateful that he decided that this would be a good time for me to use with him, because I did love using with him. Sure. But my wife caught me with a needle in my lap, and she left with our baby, 6-month-old baby. And I went to treatment. And I met this guy at treatment named Chris, and Chris and I like told them, you know, we did what you do at treatment. You tell each other stupid stories and whatever. And I work at Katz's Deli in Manhattan. And I had worked there for a couple years, like a slave, like hating my life. And, I started waiting tables there, and maybe I got a year clean and I started smoking weed again. And my little fame whore thing, you can call it fame whore or just being wanting to be creative. You know what I mean? Like being creative. I wanted to make a show at Katz's. So I made a show at Katz's called The Last Jewish Waiter, which is that Grateful Dead inspired painting. And it was about a waiter who hates waiting tables and wants to have a talk show. So he does a talk show while he waits tables. And it was like got written about and it seemed like a really good idea at the time. But I was still smoking weed. I was once in a while taking pills. I was desperate to get my family back, but they were not interested in being with me. And then my daughter's mother was like, we can go on a trip together. And she didn't know, she knew I was smoking weed, but she didn't know that I would take pills occasionally. We went on a trip together and we went to Lancaster, Pennsylvania, which is Pennsylvania Dutch country, Amish country. And yeah. We were going to go to a place called Dutch Wonderland, which is a really like sad version of Disney World.
You know, I've been there. They have amazing furniture, like great rocking chairs and amazing fried chicken. They call it something else. I think they call it roasted chicken, but it's fantastic.
I don't think I ever had the fried. I feel like I really missed out.
You did. It's incredible.
What's it called?
Broasted, which is weird. It's a weird word, broasted, but I would see these signs and I would think nothing of it because when I was there, I was eating like garbage and broasted to me just sounded like roasted. And, you know, you can buy a roasted chicken in pretty much any grocery store nowadays. But then somebody was like, no, roasted is fried. I don't know how they cook it, but it's battered and crispy and wonderful.
Wonder why it's called roasted. It's like when the bro roasts it, so it's fried.
I know. The word does not work for me either, but they make it good.
Man, we were just there. I wish I had known. I would have totally. I just wrote down roasted just so I make a mental note. Yeah. Anyway, we were there. She found. She brought Xanax for herself to help her sleep. She like takes a tiny bit of a pill to sleep. I stole it, took it. She found out, went berserk. And I lost custody again. I had lost custody when she found me with the needle and I had lost it again after years of just trying to create a family, you know, just in my head, like, oh my God, I have this beautiful woman and this beautiful child that's ours. And I can't believe I'm such a fuck up that I'm losing this opportunity. And when that happened, I was just like, oh, the shame, all the years of using kind of culminated in that shameful moment. And I was like, I got to get sober. And I reached out to Chris, and Chris had relapsed 100 times since I had met him in treatment. And now he had a year and a half. It was the summer of 2015. And I started talking to him every day, and he's like, go to AA. And I was like, okay. So I went to AA, and I started committing myself to it. Like, and I never thought I was going to do that. I never even drank. I just needed some kind of spiritual solution. I was totally fucked. And Chris was like, you know, I really loved The Last Jewish Waiter. And I was like, yeah, me too. I love The Last Jewish Waiter. And he's like, well, I would love to do something like that with you. And I was like, what do you do? You know, and meanwhile, Chris writes articles and he's a brilliant storyteller. And then I thought about it, and he had the funniest drug stories I had ever heard when we were in treatment together. And I was like, you know what? I had another friend while I was really high. He was like, we should start a podcast about the worst drug stories ever. And I was like, what's a podcast, you know? And I was like, I didn't understand it. And then his idea came back to me, and I said to Chris, we should start a podcast about the worst drug stories ever. And Chris was like, what's a podcast? I was like, just come to my house and we'll do it. And he came to my house. I had 4 months. He had almost 2 years clean. We sat in front of a MacBook Pro. We had no gear. We talked into the mic on the laptop, and we recorded an episode. And then I was like, let's just, and we agreed that we were going to do one every week, and that we were going to tell, it was going to be dopey on drugs, addiction, and dumb shit. And it was just going to be dumb, fucked up using stories. And after the first episode, we kind of decided that people needed to know that we were sober, or else it would just seem like we were glorifying drug use. And within a very short time, like, we didn't have a shit ton of audience or anything, but we had a little audience, and we had people writing us and people saying that they felt like they were less alone. And when you ask me the altruistic aspect of dopey, it's like people felt less alone, but I knew that meant it was a decent show. So it's hard for me to say, right? You know, sure. What I mean?
Yeah. I know what you're saying. It gets very complicated. Like, we could go down into like Ayn Randian objectivism and say like all altruism is self fulfilling, yeah. Right?
I like that kind of talk.
Yeah, I feel better when I contribute to other people. Would you contribute to other people if it made you feel lousy? Probably not. You know, if you
That's
weren't
a great question and answer to question.
Yeah. If I'm so, I do think like talking at a meeting or having a conversation with you right now, hopefully somebody gets something out of it. Hopefully they can relate to it, or they can go like, God, I'm struggling with X, Y, and Z, and these guys beat it, and maybe I can learn something from them. And that's helpful. That's what I'm hopeful of. But there is also something to keeping me on the track that I need to be on. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, so there is that selfishness where I'm like, I'm talking to you right now, partially because it keeps me centered in my mission.
Right. And I think you're more comfortable in having a mission, I think. I think I am too. I think I have this weird need to be like, I don't care, and it doesn't mean anything. And it's not even, I don't even know what's real anymore, but I know that that I tell people all the time, call somebody, and you don't need to want to talk to them, but just know that if you do, you're going to feel better. They're going to feel better. But the real prime objective to any drug addict is to not think about themselves. Right. So if they can think about somebody else, for a period of time, it's going to undo a lot of the crazy obsessive pressure that we tend to put upon ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? I mean, and I think that's the key of having a conversation with another person and listening and allowing them to speak, is it draws you out of yourself.
And I think Dopey, the reason that people really liked it, it was for the people that went to meetings and felt uncomfortable at meetings. It was like half of Dopey was making fun of AA. You know, half of Dopey was like how uncomfortable it was to be in a 12-step spiritual program. Yeah. And then the other half was like times you'd shoot up and your needle would break or something. You know, it was just like whatever, you know. And the audience started to participate. The audience started to send in stories, which we loved. And I made a joke and said, "Stay strong, Dopey Nation." And then all of a sudden, Dopey Nation existed. We had some tattoo artists come on the show, and we were like, "Would you give a free Dopey tattoo to somebody who wants it?" And they were like, "Yeah." And this girl goes to get the tattoo, and she was so fucked up when she went to get the tattoo. He was like, "You guys have to pay for this." So we wound up paying for it. But that was the first Dopey tattoo. And then like since then, I think like 50 people have Dopey tattoos, which is incredible. 8 people got Dopey heads tattooed on them at DopeyCon. It was incredible.
That's amazing.
But so the show, like whatever, it was like a little culty, you know, it was like a bug in the world of podcasts and podcasting. Dopey was a tiny bug. And Chris continued to get, he was in school to get a PhD in psychology. And I was, you know, slaving away at Katz's, and we would record the show every week. And then, he started to seem distant. I didn't know what was going on. Like I had no idea. And then one night we got into this long conversation. He seemed to like be more distant, and he started to want to do more episodes on Zoom. And I mean, like, and we still hadn't missed a week since we had started, and we were like 2 years in, 2.5 years in. And then I was like, "Dude, why aren't you coming to record anymore?" And meanwhile, he was getting his PhD in psychology. He lived in Boston. You know what I mean? Like him coming to New York was not an easy thing, but he just did it. He was like engaged to get married to this woman who was a med student at Harvard. His life was big, but still I had a sense that something was wrong. And I had decided it was that he had lost interest in the show. Although his sponsor or his friend who he worked with called me up, and he's like, "I'm a little bit worried about Chris." And around the same time, the guy who actually brought me the heroin when my wife was pregnant all of a sudden died. He relapsed and he died, and I was devastated because that guy I had been very, very close with since I was 18 or something. I'd become a heroin addict with him. I lived in Manhattan with him. I lived in Los Angeles with him. I lived upstate with him. And when he died, I was just devastated. So when our mutual friend said, "I'm a little bit worried about Chris," I got really scared. And I called up Chris and we had this long talk. And he's like, "I'm not using, I'm not relapsing, blah, blah, blah." And I believed him, but he still was a little flaky, but I believed him. Like, you know, when you talk to like a parent or a loved one and someone totally pulls the wool over their eyes and you're like, "How could you have believed that?" I was totally that person. And one night me and Chris get into this long conversation and he's like crying. Like it was like he was fighting with his girlfriend and he was incredibly emotional, and he was just finished the master's program of his PhD program. And he's like, I think I'm going to have more time to record the show. I want to become a PhD, but all I really want to do is do Dopey and make it big. And I'm like, "Yeah, me too." And it was this emotional conversation. And this is literally, you know, 5 years ago. And I don't want to tell the story in a weird way, but in the middle of the night, his girlfriend texts me and she's like, "I'm really worried about Chris." At 6:10 in the morning, I wake up to that text and I text Chris, "Are you all right? Like, should I be worried about you?" He writes me back at 6:11 literally. Like, he would write me back immediately, always. And he wrote, "I'm okay. I'm alive. Not great. I'll call you later." And I was like, okay. And Linda and I had had our second child at that point. We had bought a house. Like, our second child was an infant. She was born in May, and this was in July. And I mean, it still fucks me up to think about it. Me and Linda took the baby out, Susan, for a walk with the stroller, and I get a phone call from Chris's girlfriend, and she says he's dead. And I didn't even believe it, even though I had every reason to believe it. He was a horrible drug addict. His friend had thought he had relapsed, and Chris had told me his girlfriend was crazy. So I didn't believe it. And me and my wife and our baby are taking a walk. And I got off the phone with Chris's girlfriend, and I just said to Linda, I was like, "That was Annie. She said Chris is dead. I don't believe her." And I called Chris's sister, and she didn't call me back. And we walked for probably 45 minutes. And I called a bunch of Chris's friends in Great Barrington, and they didn't believe it. They didn't know. And then his sister called me back, and he had died that morning, right after he had texted me. He had overdosed on fentanyl. And for whatever reason, the word spread quickly that Chris died. And I think anybody that had ever listened to the show, like, all converged and listened to the show. And all of a sudden, our audience was bigger, and they created a Dopey Nation Facebook page to mourn him, because they really felt like they knew him. He was really open, really funny, smart. He knew addiction and recovery, like, backwards and forwards, milligrams. Like, he was somebody that was a great conversationalist and a brilliant mind. And it really fucked a lot of people up when he died. I mean, probably me and his family, most of all. His family, like, they had been through the ringer with him since he was 12 or something. He was like smoking crack at Little League football, like, at age 14 or something. So they had been through the ringer, and I'm sure part of them were relieved to know that it didn't have to happen again. But he was coming up on, I think, 4.5 years when he died.
Right.
So it changed the trajectory of the show. It changed the way I looked at what I was doing. And it really just changed my life. Like, when I was using, I was using for a million years, no one died. And here, within 2 months of my recovery, 2 months of my, I think I had 2.5 years or almost 3 years then, two of my best friends had died within 6 weeks. It's like crazy.
Yeah. Fentanyl's really scary. I knew a lot of people that use drugs, and only one of them ever OD'd. And he OD'd like 7 times before he died. And then he did finally die. But, you know, when I used drugs, the way to get fentanyl was a lollipop.
Yeah.
You couldn't extract it out of the lollipop. You could only stick the lollipop in your mouth, and a patch, which you could get the fentanyl out of the patch. And then I remember the amount, like.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Growing up as a kid, my mom would never let us have real cereal. When I say real cereal, I mean the stuff that you'd find at a normal grocery store. My mom would get us the cardboard shavings at the health food store, and I was always miserable with my cereal. And then I would magically go to my friend's house, and they would have real cereal. And I would be so envious, and I would sit and eat bowl after bowl of delicious frosted goodness, sugary, wonderful stuff. And then I grew up and I was able to buy my own cereal, but that lasted all of 2 minutes because then I started dieting, so cereal left my life entirely. Well, not anymore. Not anymore. Now there's Magic Spoon, which is high protein cereal. My favorite flavor is their peanut butter. It's incredible. Variety pack. Four flavors are cocoa, fruity, frosted, and peanut butter. This pack has 0 grams of sugar, 13 to 14 grams of protein, and 4 to 5 grams of net carbs. Only 140 calories a serving. It's high protein, has 0 grams of sugar, keto friendly, gluten free, grain free, and soy free. It's incredible. Go to magicspoon.com/glutton and grab a variety pack and try it today. And be sure to use our promo code GLUTTON at checkout to save $5 off your order. And Magic Spoon is so confident in their product, it's backed with a 100% happiness guarantee. So if you don't like it for any reason, they'll refund your money. No questions asked. Remember, start your day off right with a delicious bowl of high-protein cereal at magicspoon.com/glutton and use the code GLUTTON to save $5 off. Thank you, Magic Spoon, for sponsoring this episode. Like a match head would set you up for a while, a match head of fentanyl. And I just can't imagine having access to lots of that stuff.
Yeah, you know, in the beginning of it, Chris and I would always talk about how fortunate we were that we got out before there was fentanyl. And then meanwhile, he turns around and he gets it as whatever happened, he went and got it. And then my dad, I remember, because there are so many people in the audience were dying. And my dad was like, wow, this fentanyl is really out of control. But I was still in denial about it. And I was like, well, drugs always kill people. But then as the years have gone by, as the months have gone by, and every month somebody's turning up dead, it's so scary. We did a talk with this writer. He wrote Dreamland. Do you know this guy? He's pretty famous. I'm going to have to Google him because I'll lose my mind if I don't remember his name. 1 second. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. I want to know his name too.
He's a brilliant writer. His name is...
I wish we had an intern who could Google it for us.
I wish I did. I
wish your German gal was on Zoom with us and could tell us. This is a perfect job for her.
Here it is. Oh, yeah. His name is Sam Quinones. And he's this brilliant journalist. And he wrote a book called Dreamland, which was kind of like a heroin addict book. And then he wrote this book about fentanyl. And the fentanyl book was all about this opportunity that all of these drug dealers had to buy fentanyl so cheap and become millionaires and not know what they were doing, which is why all these deaths happened, because they didn't make the dosages properly. And then you have all these other kids who think they're buying Xanax, and the fentanyl is so much cheaper than even like alprazolam powder. Like, I just did an interview with this guy. His name was Max Marshall, and he wrote a book about a Xanax ring at the College of Charleston, where there was a kid that got shot over the Xanax ring. But it was like 2 years before fentanyl. So it wasn't like this rash of ODs. And you know, a Xanax ring in Charleston now is fentanyl and just death. It's crazy. Yeah. It's a horrible time to be a drug user, I think.
I completely agree. Going back to Chris, I know a lot of my friends in AA take the kind of point of view, because you do wind up losing people at odd ages, you know, when you're sober and around sober people, you just wind up losing people. And a lot of them really do take, and I don't know if this is like a front that people are putting up, like a stoic front, or if it's just 100% sincere, because I don't totally know how to feel, but a lot of them really do say like this, his suffering's over, that person's suffering is over. Is that how you felt about Chris, or were you just devastated?
I didn't feel like that. I was devastated, but I was really angry. and scared, you know. There's a lot of loss, you know, between Todd and Chris. It was a lot of loss. And I to this day, I don't think his suffering is over, unless I think more in terms of like the Buddhist kind of idea that life is suffering, because I had seen him have so much happiness and so much success. And, you know, that was 5 years ago that Chris died, 5 years ago last summer. So, and every year I've done 2 to 3 shows just about Chris. So I've like unearthed every story I can and talked about it so many times that I get almost lost in the conversation. But I've had dreams about him where he shows up and he doesn't know he's dead. I heard from a medium who told me that Chris contacted her and that he had just finally accepted that he was going to go to heaven. And Chris believed in heaven. Like, he was a big afterlife guy. So like, that made me feel good that he believed in heaven. And she said she saw him ascend to heaven. I'm not a big afterlife person. One night this medium texted me like late at night with a picture of this spooky reflection in her window. And she's like, "I think that's Chris." And I'm like terrified. I didn't encounter his using as suffering. He kept it so secret that I had no idea he was doing it. I didn't know that he was suffering. After he died, they found, they had cocaine in his system, fentanyl in his system, benzos in his system, but they had found like a bag of drugs in his car and a pack of cigarettes, which I thought was really interesting, and rubber gloves. Because Chris was such a fucking diabolical, brilliant drug addict, he wore the rubber gloves so that you wouldn't smell the cigarettes on his hand.
Was supposedly smober too?
Yeah.
Wow.
Right? So like, I think that he was suffering, but if he had lived. And then the other thing was his girlfriend thought he was relapsing. His sister runs a kind of treatment, sober coaching kind of thing, where they keep addicts post-care, like doing a SoberLink breathalyzer, checking in all the time, sometimes doing a UA if they have to. And the guy, his guy, showed up that night, the night that he died, and he took a drug test. And he died that night. And if they had gotten the results the next day, he would have just gone to treatment. You know what I mean? Yeah. So never did I think his suffering is over. I thought, oh my God, like he'd be so upset that this is what happened. Right. You know, he loved it. I think mostly he really loved life.
Yeah. Yeah. The whole their suffering is over. For me, I think of somebody with like late stage cancer or AIDS or somebody who's, you know,
mentally ill,
confined to a bed. Yeah. That works for me. Their suffering is over. But often when I hear their suffering is over with regards to somebody I know through the program or something like that, I'm often like, I didn't see them suffering a lot. And so that doesn't just solve it. That's not just the riddle that solves my grief.
It was the thing I heard that was even worse than their suffering is over. Like, my sponsor had moved to LA and I didn't have a sponsor. And I knew I needed one. So I reached out to somebody that I had known in the rooms and I told him what happened. And he said, "Well, we need to step over dead bodies to stay sober."
Yeah.
And I was like, ugh. You know, and he's right. You know what I mean? He's right. But my friend, you know, my best friend, just two of my best friends just died. I don't want to step over their bodies. I want to grieve a bit.
Yeah.
I guess the point is you got to keep going.
Sure.
You got to step over them and you got to keep your recovery first, which I believe in those things. But it's just like, come on.
Yeah, no. Sometimes, but I think, but you know, look, for me, I go like, that's how that person's dealing with it. That's how they're processing it. And it can seem crass sometimes, especially, you know, because often the conversation will be about somebody you're not super close with. You just know them from a meeting.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think in that situation, it's easier to step over that body.
Yeah.
But I think also you're right. It was this guy's process, and I'm very soft, and that's not my go-to. And, you know, it's still 5 years later, it's still very weird for me, because also the show, right? Like within a certain amount of time of Chris's death, This American Life, which is this giant podcast, did a show about Chris's death, and Dopey got much bigger, you know, and then we started to get sponsors, and like I had told you, I'd always wanted to do a talk show, and now I had a talk show, and now my audience had grown, and it was on the back of his death. And
did you have guests prior to his death, or was it just you guys talking?
We had guests. He always hated when we had guests, though. But I liked having guests. And once in a while, like we had Artie Lang, who's this comedian from the Howard Stern show. We had Danny Boy O'Connor from House of Pain. And that happened totally randomly. We just had, you know, like then we had a bunch of just drug addicts that we were friends with that would call in and tell crazy stories. But mostly Chris died on episode 142. And most of the first 142 episodes are just me and him like kicking it late night. Like we're doing like four shows. And by the third one, we're just out of our minds laughing as though we were high, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Which was really fun, and really why I think people like the show, because it's like, oh wait, those guys can be stupid and have fun and be sober. Like that's interesting.
Right. Yeah. No, there is for sure, even in my own head, there's almost a puritanical feeling that I associate with myself towards like any kind of cutting loose, you know, and this is something I hang on my own shoulders, and it's like, no, I'm allowed to be silly. I can goof off with my kids. I can do all the things that it used to take substances to get me to do.
That's interesting to me. So cause you came and did Dopey.
Yeah.
And you were amazing on the show.
Thank you.
Super funny, super open. We're willing to get silly.
Yeah. For sure. No, but that's what I'm saying. Like, there's a part of me that's like, you got to always walk the line straight and narrow. And like, I think it's from the amount of inhibition that was relieved when I did drugs. Like, I went from being really introverted to like feeling like there was no attention on myself at all. Utterly extroverted. And I don't know, sometimes now I have to remind myself that fun does not only coexist with substances or whatever, you know,
gluttony.
Yeah, exactly. Manic sensation makes me think the only thing that could enhance this is a pizza, you know, like those things are not always true. Like I can get silly and joke around. You know, I actually force myself to do it sometimes with my kids in public, where it's like embarrassing them right now would be fun. Maybe if I skip through the mall, this will be pure joy for me to watch how miserable it makes them. And so I'll do something silly like that. But like, I really have to force myself to do that. Whereas I used to play Follow the Leader through New York with my friends when I was high on dope, and I didn't care about anybody else. Like I never thought about it, you know?
I think that's very interesting. So like, if you need, like, obviously if you skip through the mall with your kids or you do something that, cause I love to embarrass my kids too, but I don't know how I could live not silly. Like I have the heart, I'm so uncomfortable getting serious. Like being an adult is not 100% comfortable for me, which is something I'm really kind of working on. Like, I think we could use a lot of,
yeah, we could rub off on each other.
We could swap a little.
You know, I, I don't think I am innately serious. I think that I, when I became a father, I was so not set up for it. I almost thought of it as like, what should a father do? Okay, now I'm just going to pretend and do that, what I think a responsible father should do. And so I like kind of created this persona. And it's also like, you know, I think about people who I assume aren't constantly battling the voices in their head about stopping at the drive-through or driving, you know, down to the section of town where people hang out on corners, and like those thoughts just aren't occurring to them. So then I go like, well, how does that person behave in life? I'm just going to create a facsimile of that and behave in that way. Because I am constantly kind of having this inner dialogue that is like an idea. Nope, that's not the right idea. Find the right idea. Okay, that idea is good. I'm going to go with that idea. You know, that keeps me going in the direction I want to be going in.
I love that. I wish I was doing a little bit more of that. I really do. Like, it reminds me of, I was a big comic book nerd when I was a kid. And it reminds me of like the inner dialogue, monologue that Bruce Banner would have. Not to get upset, stay okay, so he doesn't turn into the Hulk and destroy a city or something. I tend to like, I still act without thinking fairly often. I react without really considering what's going to happen. I mean, I'm sober 8 years of change now. We've never missed a week of the show, and we're up to like 440 episodes or something. I would like to be a little bit more measured in my response, a little bit more organized in my day, and a little bit more thoughtful in my plan. Like, yeah. I'm like, that's why I want to do this couch to 5K. It could be the answer to my problems.
The couch to 5K sounds awesome. I'm amazed that they have an app for that. And it just tells you what to do every day, how to build onto it to get to the 5K.
I did one day. Ethan, just let's be clear about this, okay? One day, and I walked my dog at the same time, okay? And that's you know, problem number one. You probably shouldn't do that. So day one of app of couch to 5K, you walk for 5 minutes, and I could walk all day. Like, I could walk 30 miles. I'm a walker. So you walk for 5 minutes, and it's like, okay, you will start running in 3, 2, 1, and then you run for a minute. And the dog runs me.
Oh,
and
my God.
Run for a minute, you know, not crazy. And then then like 10 seconds before you're supposed to stop, they said, okay, in 10, 9, 8, okay, you walk. And then you walk for a minute and a half. And then the lady says, you're going to run. So you basically run for 6 minutes out of the half hour with the intervals. And I don't do anything. So they tell you to take the next day off. Now, my wife, my beautiful, sweet, loving wife, wants to do this with me, which is a recipe for it never happening. And when I told her that I did the first day without her, she got really angry at me, which made me not do it again.
Right.
So I'm starting over. I'm not going to tell her. This is going to be my new secret life, couch to 5K. No one has to know. Yeah. But I'm going to be 50. On June, if I live to June 1st, I will be 50, and I want to do the 5K. I want to be the fittest I've ever been at 50, because I've never been fit. I've never been close. Like,
yeah.
Never.
Yeah. Fuck. I might get this app. I might start to fuck around with this app because I cannot run. And I wonder if I actually trained to run, I would be able to run.
Well, I would love for you to do it. And I would love to compare notes, and I would love to force you to call into Dopey periodically to talk about your experience with Couch 5K.
Couch to 5K. Okay, maybe we'll do it together. I'll download the app and look at it. Maybe. When do you start next?
I mean, I'm ready to fucking do this thing, man. I'm crazy. I'm like ready to tomorrow. I'm ready to start Thursday.
Are you allowed to run on a treadmill?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That might be the cincher for me. That might just do it. Because I go between Florida and New York, and Florida right now it's fine, but you know, there's going to be times where it's just inhumane to run outside.
Come May, it will be doing the 5K.
In New York.
We could do that. Or we could, I mean, like, there's a 5K I was invited to run in Vermont that I'm interested in.
What part of Vermont?
I don't know. There's some rehab that is run by the Fish guitar player, Trey Anastasio, and they do some 5K, and they asked me if I would do it. And I'm like, no way. But if I actually could run a 5K, I would do it. But if you are interested in doing a 5K, I would find one in New York and do it with you.
Well, I just want to say, to be completely transparent, I have run a 5K.
And I appreciate your transparency.
And this was at the absolute peak of my cardio health, where I could get on a bicycle and ride 150 miles, no problem. And I went and did the Livestrong 5K in Austin, Texas. And it kicked my ass so bad.
5K.
Oh my God. Yeah. It didn't fuck me up cardio wise. Just like, my body was like, what the fuck did you just do? We don't do that. My back hurt. My legs hurt. It like trashed me. So I just wonder if, like, I'm sure I can run for a minute. I mean, I can do a rowing machine for an hour right now. I should be able to run for a minute without damaging myself. If that's the way I progress and ease into actually being able to. Anyway, all I'm saying is, let's try it and see what happens. I can run for 6 minutes on Thursday.
Dude, I ran for 6 minutes on Saturday, and it hurt a little bit. Hurt, yeah. My shins.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
My shins were like, what's going on? You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. You're scaring me a little bit. But I think that if I do the app, they say 5K.
This is what I'm saying. I'm hopeful that we, by taking the day off and then going back to it and increasing very incrementally, I'm hopeful. I'm not sure, but I'm hopeful that we can run a little bit without really hurting ourselves. I want to go back to something you said when you were talking about, and then I know we got to get off soon. We've been talking forever. Okay, real quick. You were talking about setting a goal for, what was the date? For the Dopey Fest, and you weren't eating, and Halloween candy, and you weren't eating desserts and sweets leading up to it, and carbs and getting ready. Do you ever feel like?
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Okay, I have two new obsessions that I need to share with you. Impress No Glue Press-On Manis and Impress Press-On Falsies Lashes. Trust me, these are getting ready game changers. Both require no glue, so there is no damage to your natural nails and lashes, no mess, and no annoying dry times. Just one step and you're done. Boom. Instant glam. Visit impressbeauty.com/presson and use code PRESSON25 at checkout for 25% off Impress manicure and Press-On falsies.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you set a sobriety goal of like, I'm going to stay sober until this day, that day comes, I would definitely be using the next day. When I used to do that, I got to stay sober through this weekend because I got a big meeting. The weekend's over, I'm using for sure. And when I would set a goal of like, I got to just lose 100 pounds, I'd lose 100 pounds and then I'm immediately gaining weight back. Do you feel like those kind of goals actually fuck you up?
I don't know. You know, the truth is that I never could get limited clean time. I never could be like, I'm going to get sober this week. Like, I never did. I never got any time until I mean, I guess I white knuckled that 10-month period, but that was strictly to get custody of my baby. Like they were.
Well, and that's what I'm saying. That's the goal. Right. I got to stay sober until.
Right. I got to get 12 months so I can give a hair follicle test and pass, which I did. And now I don't consider it. Like I'm just not ready to make the commitment to no dessert for life.
Yeah.
Like, I hear where you're going with it, and the idea is
no. Listen, you cannot be abstinent from food. This is not
right
in the realm of possibility. So we have a whole different set of paradigms to work for. All I would offer you is, what about fruit? Fruit can be a good dessert. What about, you know, I'm just saying, trading out the Entenmann's cake, or, you know, they've got low calorie ice creams. It's not as good, but you get used to it.
Yeah, no, we do those, you know, those Yasso yogurt.
Yeah. Cups,
delicious.
They're great.
Delicious. 100 calorie. Like, I haven't gotten real ice cream, like a real pint of ice cream, and I don't even remember. And I haven't enjoyed my overindulgence in Entenmann's in forever. But dude, I eat cereal out of the box with chocolate chips. It's as though you're eating a cake. You know what I mean? Like the way I snack, there was an old Simpsons episode where Homer like is getting ready to watch the Super Bowl and he's surrounded by food and he's like, and that's how I am at night and any night. I'm in the cabinet. I'm eating chocolate and cereal and then I eat a yogurt pop. You know, like.
Right. And that's the healthy. You're like, I'm full, but I need something else. I'll do the healthy option.
What I want. I mean, it's like with drugs and alcohol, there is no moderation for me. So there's only abstinence. But like you just said, we can't abstain from eating. So what I need to do, I know there's strategies. Like I need to add a lot of water to my night. I feel like if I drank a bunch of water beforehand, I need to practice mindfulness, frankly. I don't even know when I'm full. I just eat.
Yeah. Yeah. Water at night is an issue for me because then I'm up all night peeing. It messes with my sleep. I don't like that. Mindfulness, honestly, the word infuriated me for years and years and years. And then I started really thinking about everything I was doing and I realized, oh, I'm just doing mindfulness. The word is not so bad. You know, but, and now when people get upset about the word diet or calorie, I'm like, I understand why it's upsetting, but like, if you just perceive it differently, if you take a different point of view on it, if you change your perspective on it, if you use it clinically, it's a useful word.
I'm not against any word. I didn't love mindfulness. I didn't love wellness. I didn't love a lot of words, but now I just want quality of life. And like, when I eat, I think I'm eating for quality of life. It's eating for the moment instead of for the day, you know, it's eating for, or instead of for the life. And I just need to try to shift it. And I don't try as hard as I should.
Yeah. Yeah. No. Okay. Well, everything's a work in progress. Dave, this has been lovely. Thank you so much. I am going to download the Couch to 5K app. And we will discuss where we go from here. I think I'm on a plane Thursday, but I will find a treadmill. I always think I'm too heavy for those, but I might not be anymore. Maybe I'm not too heavy for a treadmill.
I have no idea.
I have no idea either. But I'll you know, worst case scenario, I'm running outside for 6 minutes.
Dude, I'm excited that you're excited at this idea.
I am excited because I do feel like being able to run a bit shouldn't be beyond my reach. I don't have any desire to run a marathon, but a little bit of running. And I'm just like, you know, I have some knee issues and some hip issues and stuff like that, but I should be able to run a bit.
Can I ask a stupid question before we go?
Sure. Yeah.
Why wouldn't you? I mean, like, you're so interested in fitness and pushing your body. I'm surprised you have no interest in running a marathon.
Oh yeah, I have no interest at all, but I will. Zero. Well, I'll tell you why. Because the 5K fucked me up so bad. Mm-hmm. And this was at a time where I could do heavy cardio all day long. So it wasn't that I was unable to perform. I could perform, I could push my body. It was the structure of running just was so bad that it fucked me up for a couple of weeks. And so I've just never gone back to it.
See, I think this week was the New York City Marathon, and I was in New York. I was in Manhattan yesterday, and all these fucking Europeans are walking around with their medals. They're looking all fit and tan with their medals. And I've never had any interest in running a marathon, except wouldn't that be so cool if I ever ran a marathon, I had a medal, and I was all fit and tan and shit?
I want you to do it. I saw some social media stuff from the New York Marathon, and I was actually a little bit envious. I just wish I had been there to like cheer people on.
You're a wonderful person, Ethan. You really are. Yeah. And talking to you is a joy. You're a very wonderful person to talk to. So thank you for having me.
I enjoy you too. Thank you so much. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, Ethan. Thanks, man.
And now for the Q&A.
Here's a question from Jim.
Hi, Jim.
I'm 53 years old and I've been overweight since my second year of marriage of 34 years. I was always able to keep it within 30 to 60 pounds overweight. I've taken off 50 pounds and put it right back on more times than I can count. I've been 100 pounds overweight for the past 4 years. I've recently shifted from fad diets to just a plain, heart healthy, reduced fat and calorie diet and moving a little more. I am seeing the needle move in a positive direction. My question is this: how often should a person weigh themselves? I've heard daily, I've heard never, I've heard weekly, and all sorts of other answers. I weigh myself daily now just to keep from getting anxiety dreading it. I do get discouraged when I don't see the needle move. Can you share your approach that worked for you?
Yes, this is a great question. I would stay away from anything that gives you anxiety about weighing yourself, especially if you're being consistent. There's no telling from one day to the next what's going to have an effect on the scale. There could be more sodium, and sodium could make you hold more water. Carbohydrates make you hold a lot of water. I think they actually make you hold like 4 times the amount of water that sodium makes you hold. So like without gaining or losing any fat, there can be huge fluctuations on the scale. When people do keto, the first week you can lose like 10 pounds. Most of that is water. That's not all fat. So I don't love weighing myself every day. Right now I weigh myself maybe once a week. And when I was doing a really very structured cut to take a picture of myself with my shirt off, I would weigh myself twice a week. I would weigh myself on Mondays and Fridays, and that was okay. And I'd have to talk myself through it. When I weigh myself on maintenance, it's the most bizarre thing because I am living my life intentionally keeping my weight the same. And when I get on the scale and it hasn't gone down, it bums me out. So there's some cognitive dissonance there where I know I like expect it not to go down. I'm not doing anything that would make it go down. And when it's the same, it's upsetting to me. So, you know, if you have anxiety about the scale, you can get rid of the scale entirely. You can start measuring yourself and then, you know, take a new measurement of yourself once a week or something like that and totally get rid of the scale. Fat loss will be evident in your measurements. There will be a change there. It might not mean the same to you as a pound on the scale, like seeing a number that's less, but the measurement itself should go down if you're losing fat, and that way you could avoid the scale. But like the scale is just a metric that I try to use in the most rational way possible. And sometimes my emotional side gets the better of me. And then I tell that those emotions to shut the hell up and I try to move on with my day, you know, but there's those kind of things. I also don't take any single weight any longer as defining of what I'm doing. I look at a 2 week span and go, has my weight increased or decreased over these 2 weeks? And when I'm maintaining, I do the same, because I'll get on the scale once a week now, and sometimes it'll be up a pound or two or three, and sometimes it'll be down a pound or two or three. But over the course of a couple of weeks, is it where I want it to be, or is it going up, or is it trending down? And you can do that over whatever period of time you want. You know, over the course of a year, that might be too much, especially if you're dieting with the intention of losing weight. You might want to do like, what's the monthly trend? Get on the scale once a week, or get on the scale twice a week, and literally graph it out. Is that graph trending up or trending down? And that's really all you want to do. And for me, it's a huge kind of breakthrough to be able to maintain my weight. This is something I was never capable of doing. I was either, you know, on some extreme diet and losing weight rapidly, or gaining weight. That's it. That's all I really knew. Every time I weighed myself at a doctor's office when I was young, or not, I was gaining weight. And then when I was dieting, you know, really extremely, I was losing weight. And then when I was dieting and not losing weight, it was like this huge disaster. So like, you got to get rid of all of that and just like, be realistic with yourself. How much weight should you be losing every week on the diet you're on? A pound or a pound and a half? That's what all the research suggests, you know, unless you're 500 pounds and you can lose more than that. But like, you know, if you don't have hundreds of pounds to lose, the average is a pound and a half a week. Like, that's really good weight loss. And so if you look at a month, have you done that? Have you lost a pound and a half? Then you're killing it. You don't need to get on the scale every week. I mean, every day. Sorry, every day.
Right.
But you don't need to get on the scale at all. You could take measurements to track it.
That's a good reminder too, because I mean, I know from my own personal, so many diets and things where we don't think about that as much. We get so stuck on the scale, but yeah, you could measure yourself and go, oh, that's, cause that's also very satisfying. And it's also a metric for how you're actually doing. So
yeah.
Yeah.
And for me, honestly, I like it for the purpose of, if I get on the scale and it started trending up, then I just have to get really honest with myself. What have I been doing? Have I added some sauces? Have I stopped measuring my olive oil? What have I been doing that it's trending up? And usually I can spot it and go, oh, I've, you know, there's this drink that has 50 calories that I wasn't drinking before. You know, this is just a total hypothetical. And now I'm drinking those and I'm not really counting them. And so that's, you know, having some effect on me. I should stop doing that, you know, whatever it is.
Thank you for that. And thank you for the question. If anyone else has a question, you know what? Don't be shy. Send it to us. We'd love to hear it. And Ethan would love to answer it.
I sure would.
You can email us at hello@americanglutton.net.
Thanks for listening to this episode of American Glutton. I'm Ethan Suplee. You can follow us on Instagram @AmericanGluttonPodcast. Sincerely.